Okay, this hour we'll take your phone calls with Tim Schwartz, noted author. He's writing a book called Alien Lives Matter with Timothy Beckley. And, of course, some of his latest works include Tim R. Schwartz's big book of incredible alien encounters. He did write a book about Admiral Byrd. We'll talk to him a little bit about that, too, and take your calls when we come back. Back with Tim Schwartz. Tim, you wrote a book about the Lost Diaries of Admiral Byrd. Mm-hmm. His entire episode fascinates me. Do you think that really happened? His travels into what could have been the center of the Earth?
Yeah, that's a good question, George, and that's something that I have been researching for years. There is a good possibility that book was produced as kind of a distraction to what was really happening to him at that time, because you know, the book writes about how in 1946-47 he had flown on a expedition over the Arctic, when in actuality he was involved in a thing called Operation High Jump, which was taking place on the opposite side of the planet in Antarctica. And Operation High Jump was an extremely weird operation. I mean, the United States government commissioned a huge flotilla of ships, aircraft carrier, even a submarine to go to Antarctica under the auspices of either training soldiers to work in Arctic-type conditions, just in case the Soviet Union decided to invade North America, coming across, the, you know, say, like Alaska and Canada,
right,
and places like that.
Straits.
Or to look for mineral resources. There's been all kinds of rumors that was just a cover story. That they were actually looking for, as you had said earlier, a possible polar opening into the inner Earth,
mm-hmm.
looking for a secret Nazi base, because we do know that the Nazis had established some kind of base in Antarctica during their reign of power. So we really don't actually know for sure. I mean, you know, we do know that Admiral Byrd was in Antarctica at the time. So I imagine that it may have been kind of a combination of all of the above, with some of the more weirder aspects of his story in the secret diaries of Admiral Byrd, put in there to kind of discredit what was actually going on.
But they were weird stories where they
weird.
Talked about woolly mammoths and dinosaurs and all kinds of things, didn't they?
Well, not only that, but UFOs that escorted him and his navigator inside the Hollow Earth, where they met like the leaders who told Byrd that they were concerned about our use of atomic weapons, and that if we didn't stop, that they were going to come to the surface and kick our butts.
And what year would that Byrd trip have been?
1947.
47, right around Roswell and Kenneth Arnold's sightings.
Just before, in fact. And that's one of the strange parts of this. After Byrd was finished with Operation High Jump, which, by the way, ended a lot earlier than it was supposed to, he came back to the United States and had a secret meeting with members of Congress, telling them that it was his fear that the Western Hemisphere was going to be invaded, as he put it, by missiles coming across the poles. Not just missiles, he said manned missiles coming across the poles. And then shortly afterwards, you then saw the start of the modern UFO period. It was just a couple months later that Kenneth Arnold had his sighting. the Roswell incident happened, and everything, it almost seemed like it was a confirmation of what Byrd was fearful of.
All right, let's take some calls, have some fun with our callers, Tim. Let's start by going to Rick in Missouri. Welcome to the program. Hi, Rick. Thanks for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. I've listened for years, and I've always wanted to call.
Well, thank you. I'm glad you got through.
Well, it was probably about 9 years ago. I was driving a semi out of Michigan, going south towards Fort Wayne, Indiana, and there was like a circular thing up in the sky. It was at night, and probably 7 to 10 lights would jet out and circle around to counterclockwise, and when they would go back in to the central location, they wouldn't go back as far as they had come from. It was kind of like a sawtooth thing, and it kept rotating counterclockwise. And I watched this through the windshield for quite a long time until I just couldn't see it anymore through my windshield while I was driving south in the big truck. And when I got down to the truck stop, I went in there to the fuel desk and I said, "Hey, is anybody else ever come in here and this evening and say they saw a bunch of lights up in the sky?" It was a unique experience.
Never again, though, huh?
Never again.
I love it. Go ahead, Timmy.
Well, it's interesting that this took place in Indiana, because I'm an Indiana resident. But, it's fascinating because there have been a number of UFO incidents involving truckers. Not only all across the world, but Indiana itself has had a couple of very unusual sightings in the late 1970s. There was a convoy, if you want to go back to that term and call that, of truckers on Interstate 70 in central Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
And they were being harassed by a UFO that was flying overhead, periodically shooting a spotlight down on them, blinding the truckers to the point where they were afraid that they were going to crash. And this UFO harassed these truckers for over a half hour following him. They were going, they were heading west. On 70, and finally at one point, like many of these other encounters, the UFO just suddenly stopped and flew away.
Just like that.
Just like that. Yep. No rhyme or reason that it would decide to harass these truckers, but it did.
What's your guess tell you, Tim, in terms of where they're coming from? Other dimensions, other planetary systems? Where in the heck are they coming from?
Well, it could be a situation where it's all of the above. I'm not going to discount the extraterrestrial hypothesis of UFOs, but there are so many just really bizarre UFO incidents that seem to take the phenomena beyond just nuts and bolts craft with scientists and explorers from other planets coming to visit us. I mean, I do think that there is a paranormal aspect to a large portion of the UFO phenomena. Some of it is rather personal, that a person themselves are somehow able to generate the UFO experience, almost akin to how a person can generate a ghost sighting, or being able to tip tables or make a Ouija board move during seances. There does seem to be some kind of connection. Then again, I gotta love the idea that we're dealing at least in some part of time with time travelers, because many of these accounts that people have when they actually meet the occupants of these landed UFOs, they're told about their future, things that's going to happen to them, you know, people that they're going to marry, where they're going to live, things like that. Now, you know, you would think that if these were physical visitors from other planets, how would these things know this person's particular details about their future? So, you know, I'm not going to rule out anything anymore. You know, when I was younger, George, you know, like a lot of people started out believing, yeah, UFOs, visitors from other planets. Now, you know, I think the sky is the limit, so to speak.
Absolutely. Audrey's in Grand Rapids, Michigan, first-time caller. Good morning, Audrey.
Hi. How are you?
Good to have you with us. Good.
Thank you. I love your show, and I've been listening for years. And do you want me to go ahead and tell a story?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. We were living in Chicago Heights in Illinois, and my husband decided he wanted a divorce because he was having an affair with this woman. And the woman was trying to scare me into moving back to California because my husband wouldn't make the decision to leave me and the kids. He wanted the kids. And so she would come at night, and she would scratch on the windows and scare us and stuff.
Jeez.
And so
wacko.
I was going, yeah, a wacko. So anyway, my husband was coming that night. It was Wednesday, and I was going to go to church. And so it was around, I don't know. Anyway, it was light. And so he came, but he was very late, and it took 45 minutes to get to church, and I only had 15 minutes to get there. So I was crying and praying to the Lord, saying, you know, I really wanted to go to this service. I really needed to go to church tonight because of the stress and everything I'd been under. And so I was driving along, and just as I was praying that and crying, something happened, and I was driving into the parking lot of the church, and I pulled in, and I thought, oh, gee, I'm probably going to be in the middle of the meeting, or they're already started, but I went in anyway, and the church was empty. There was only a few people in the pews, and so I looked at the time on the clock, and I was actually 20 minutes early. Church had not even started. And I know what time my watch said and what time the clock said at home. So I must have time traveled because I don't remember anything except when I pulled into the parking lot. And I sat down and got to witness the whole service. And that's a great story.
I have to ask you this, Audrey. Did your husband know that the wacko was scratching on your windows and stuff?
I tried to tell him, but he said no, that it wasn't true. Actually, one night during the storm, she came in. She got his key, and he didn't know that she had the key, and she came in.
Tim, this sounds like a movie.
It really does. But, you know, I have to tell you, George, this is a beautiful story.
It is, indeed.
I love this story, and I've heard of a lot of very similar stories. You know, it seems that people, when they're under just tremendous stress, strong emotions at play here, somehow are able to affect their reality around them. And this is a perfect example. She was crying. She was upset. I mean, not only, you know, from this night, but you know, you had this cumulative effect of what had been going on for her over a period of time, and all she wanted was to make that service in time. And yet, despite the fact that she had left late and knew that she wasn't going to make it, She showed up 20 minutes early.
And made it anyway.
Yeah, and made it anyway. So, I mean, it just goes to show you, though, that our reality, the world as we see around us, is not quite like we think it is. It's a lot more malleable. And that our consciousness really plays a role in creating our reality. And I think that, maybe someday when we put aside all of our, petty bickerings and ideas of how we should be living our lives, we may have we may be able to change our reality more to our favor rather than just creating willy-nilly from one point in time to the other.
Let's go to Joe in Monterey, California. Hey, Joe, go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call, George.
Thanks, Joe.
I've been away for about a month, so I couldn't call coast to coast.
Oh, where have you been?
I was visiting a friend up in Salem.
Okay, well, I hope you had a good time.
Yeah, well, it was good. It was good to get away. I'd love to tell you about the journey coming back, but I think we should just get to business.
Yeah, save it for an open line call one night.
Definitely. I was going to ask, for good reason, have you ever run into people who can communicate with ETs, positive ETs, not the negative ones, because that happens too often?
Tim, I'm sure you have.
Oh, yes, yes, definitely. And, naturally, you have the contactees from the 1950s, but... this is a situation that has never really gone away. We just don't hear about it as much anymore. All the time I get letters and emails, phone calls from people who claim that that they have and are still experiencing contacts with beings who say that they're extraterrestrials. Sometimes these things will just come right out and say that, well, we're extraterrestrials, but we're not extraterrestrials like you think that we're extraterrestrials. They explain that the universe is a lot bigger and just completely outside of our realm of understanding. More akin, I suppose, to say like interdimensional or different reality types of beings. Now, sometimes these people will have experiences that are very similar to people who claim to have ghostly experiences. These beings will appear in their house. They'll look physical and then, talk to them and then disappear like a ghost. Sometimes these experiences will start out benevolent, and I hate to say this, will then start to turn malevolent.
Mm-hmm. That's right. In a big way, too.
In a very big way. Their house, say, will suddenly start experiencing very destructive poltergeist activity. The person who is having the experience will undergo emotional changes, oftentimes becoming depressed, maybe even suicidal.
Sounds like Amityville Horror. We're going to come back, Tim, in just a moment here on Coast to Coast AM, so don't touch your dial. On our next Coast to Coast program, Jim Rickards joins us for the first couple hours as we talk about the new Great Depression. Make sure you're part of the program. And then later on, Mark Allen Frost joins us to talk about the afterlife on Coast to Coast. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, Tim Schwartz with us, back with our final calls. Tim, what are your thoughts of the Navy videos chasing those strange, whatever they might have been?
It surprises me that they ended up leaking out in the first place.
Right.
Because they're really good, really good videos. But George, they are probably just a couple of many that the military has stored away someplace. I mean, you know, we've heard as far back as the 1950s that the Air Force, using their gun cameras, were able to get some really very clear film photographs of UFOs. So considering how advanced our technology has become when it comes to recording video, photographs, and things like that, I have no doubt that the military and the government has just, you know, reams and reams of excellent video and photographs. They may not know what they're photographs of. They just know that it's something that can't be explained.
Can you imagine what the Russians and Chinese must be doing looking at those videos, thinking we're tricking them, that we've got objects that can fly that fast?
Oh, well, I mean, you have to understand. I mean, the UFOs are worldwide phenomena, so I imagine that the Russians and Chinese have their own films and photographs of UFOs. Now, for a long time, on all sides, everyone believed that these craft could be from, you know, the officials in the United States thought that, you know, could be the Russians or the Chinese flying them, and vice versa. Now, I think every country on the planet knows that they're dealing with something that cannot be explained. They may have their own personal theories on what's going on, and there may be some suspicions, say, that that the United States has actually developed their own versions of flying saucers, maybe with the help from crashed UFO retrievals. But I think everybody across the planet is in agreement that that they're dealing with something that they cannot explain using, you know, normal science, so to speak.
You think in Genesis, what we were really talking about were extraterrestrials, not fallen angels or things like that?
Again, if we're dealing with extraterrestrials, these are creatures that have been on Earth for a long, long time, maybe even before people were here on Earth. I mean, I don't think that we're dealing with things that are just now running across this. This is something that has is either living right here with us right now, or has been in the vicinity of Earth for eons.
Absolutely. Let's go to the phones. Let's go to Monica in Oregon to get us started. Hi, Monica.
Guys doing
good
today.
Good to have you with us.
Thank you for taking my call. So I have three instances where my father actually had an encounter. We're going to start where I was raised out in the desert in the middle of Oregon. Him and my mom went for a walk one night. Well, my dad, he had to go off into the bushes to do some personal business. Well, suddenly, I don't know where from the sky, this this very bright, I would say green, white light just suddenly just beams down on him. He's looking down, and he looks back up, and it shuts off. And he comes back out. Well, my mom, you know, she saw this whole thing going on. And then they proceed to go on their walk. And now they did get interested into UFOs and aliens, or excuse me, ETs. And they got the book from Bud Hopkins, Intruders.
Mm-hmm. Well, great book.
Moving on, fast forward, yes, very good. Fast forwarding on now, we're in Lapine, which is more of a mountainous area of Oregon. He's coming back from Bend, which is about half hour away. He sees this red object, and based upon his descriptions, and they're very precise, this thing was actually like it was red, the base part of it. It was like a red half-gallon bucket. That's the only precise way I could think to describe this. The thing had black windows all the way around. Well, he said that it had a silver dome, and he's watching this thing kind of hover around, and this dome is getting bigger, taller, and taller, and taller, and then poof, it's gone. and it was like somebody hit the wrong button. So then they report this. A lady from MUFON comes over to the house, and he's reporting this sighting, you know, that he couldn't figure out. Well, then moving on from there, my mom notices they're doing another shop trip. He just suddenly gets really quiet, just really, really quiet, just all of a sudden, like, it's not even him. Well, it turns out later that day, he was apparently seeing, like, cars, like, back from the 50s, like, on the road, and then suddenly he's back in that present time.
Jeez.
Again. Yeah. So.
And he must have obviously shared all these stories with you, right?
Yes, yes. I mean, both have, but yes, he has.
What was going on there, Tim?
Well, first of all, I'm so happy to hear that that your parents were willing to share these stories. Because, you know, a lot of people, they have these experiences, and they won't tell anybody. Won't tell their kids, you know, nothing like that. But when it comes to UFO experiences, a lot of people, you know, it's like the potato chips, you know, they can't eat just one. You know, they have multiple UFO experiences over the years. And for some people, and again, this kind of gets into the almost paranormal aspect of the phenomena. It's almost that at times people have become unhooked from their time stream or timeline at various times. You know, she was talking about how her dad was suddenly seeing cars from the 1950s, like he had been, was experiencing a time slip. This is not uncommon with a lot of UFO witnesses. They'll periodically will see glimpses of the past or even the future after having a UFO sighting. But I've theorized, and I'm not the only one. You know, I'm not the only person, you know, suggesting this, but it could be that some UFOs, their propulsion system actually involves some kind of bending of time and space. And anybody who is close enough will actually get caught up into that radiation or field of influence, whatever you'd want to call it. However, this field of influence doesn't go away. The person will find themselves at times, maybe even years after the UFO event, experiencing weird fluctuations in time, sometimes losing time, sometimes gaining time, sometimes actually having an experience like your father, where it seems like that they have gone back into the past. So yes, I mean, this is a fascinating series of bizarre encounters.
Indeed. Joe in Idaho, first-time caller. Hi, Joe.
Hello.
Got you in here. Go ahead.
So I'm a truck driver in Idaho, and I was driving to Twin Falls, and when I was just driving along, I see this kind of like a green plasma light on a hill. And I mean, it was pretty big, and I've never been able to explain what that was. And then I also have a question: what about Nikola Tesla, when during the Philadelphia Project? And then you also have during World War II, the Bell Project.
Yeah, two great stories there, Tim.
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure about his reference to the Bell Project during World War II. Now, the Philadelphia Project and Tesla's involvement during World War II...
To try to make a ship disappear.
Right, right. It started out as an experiment to degauss ships to prevent them from being
in radar, right?
Right. Well, that, you know, it started out as a way to try to stop mines in the water from being attracted to the hulls of the ship magnetically. If you could degauss these ships, the mines wouldn't attach themselves. During the process of the experiments, it was discovered that if you were using electromagnetism, that you could possibly achieve radar invisibility. You know, which, I mean, that was a big thing. Radar was just being discovered at the time. And, you know, if you could make a ship so it wasn't apparent by radar, man, that would have been a great thing. Tesla's involvement was somewhat minuscule because he passed away fairly early on into these experiments. However, other people, other scientists took what Tesla had been working on and expanded on it. In fact, Tesla had warned that the type of electromagnetism that was being utilized in these experiments wouldn't be very healthy for the sailors on board. But unfortunately, it seems like that his warnings weren't heeded, and that a lot of sailors actually, you know, suffered greatly from these experiments.
And the Bell Project he was talking about was Hitler's Nazi Bell, where were trying to defy gravity.
Yeah, Der Glocken. Yes. Well, you know, that Hitler was fascinated by Tesla, and actually had suggested that they kidnap him and bring him to Germany.
Jeez.
To force
him to work there, I guess.
Yeah. But it's very probable that Nazi scientists were using some of Tesla's ideas when it came to the use of Tesla coils, electromagnetism, and the possibility that mercury, the element mercury, could be used as a way to develop an anti-gravity propulsion system. These seem to be aspects that were being used with Der Glocken, but unfortunately, most of the actual information on how this thing was built has been lost to us. You know, we just have stories on what may have been used in its construction, but I have no doubt that a lot of Tesla's ideas were being used in its development.
Joe in Long Island, New York. Let's squeeze you in here, Joe.
Tim, I'm not suggesting aliens built either the pyramids or the Great Wall of China, but do you have any thoughts on the accountability of either one of those projects as to what really was going on?
The Great Wall, and what was the other one, Joe?
The pyramids.
Pyramids.
I don't know. You know, the Great Wall is a little bit more recent than the Great Pyramids, and
quite a bit recent.
Yeah, and more than likely.
Minute and a half left. Tim,
built with human. Now the Great Pyramids, I think that they were built by humans, but I think that there's also some very good evidence that maybe a prior civilization that was more technologically advanced but had been destroyed.
Something happened on this planet, Tim, a long, long time ago. I think we had high technology, flying machines, you name it, and then something happened.
Yep, I agree. The pyramids are a good example of that lost civilization.
Tim, take about a minute and tell folks where they can get your books and email you and keep in touch with you.
Right. Well, the new book coming out is called Alien Lives Matter. Should be out by February. And you can visit our website at conspiracyjournal.com. All of our books can be found on Amazon.com. Just type in my name, and there's a couple hundred, I think, by this point.
When the new book comes out, do you want to come on? Are you going to bring Beckley? What do you want to do?
Yeah, we can do both. I think this is quite a bit of Beckley's baby, so I'm sure that he would enjoy talking about it.
Okay, well, you keep in touch with us. And you said that's coming out next month?
Yes.
All right, that means it's already done, isn't it?
Pretty close, pretty close.
Tim, thanks. You be safe out there, and keep in touch with us, okay?
Thank you, George. Had a great time tonight.
Or- Tim Schwartz. Great stories on ETs, and wow. I don't know. The only thing I've ever seen were a couple strange UFO lights on top of a way the heck up. I was on the top building of a hotel, and they were making 90-degree angles. They were weird, to be sure. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Lottasour, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burrows, Tim Banal, George Knapp, and Ian Punnett, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.